That's a good one. Little Rock Your Baby action from George McCray at 14 minutes after 9 o'clock. And greetings, you beautiful humans. This is your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host, play-by-play man, and color analyst for life, all wrapped up into one nice, neat package. Glenn Klein for a thank God it's Friday morning in the studio. We got a full house with Mr. Racine, Mark Eichhorst. Hi, Ike.
How you doing?
Getting pretty pumped for the game tonight.
You and me both.
Cubbies at home against the San Francisco Gigantes.
Yeah, the nice thing about it is we can watch three games before that.
That's not a nice thing. I like when your team plays first, you win, and then they're talking about your win in all the other games.
I would agree with you. Yeah, I know, but unfortunately, the way they thought about it, they wanted us playing the late game at 8:15, so
7:15 local time.
No, 8 o'clock our time.
I don't think so, brah.
I think so.
Do you know so?
I would say 90% sure.
Mayor Dickert, quickly on his phone, he's going to check it. The man is always ready with his phone. He texts during the show, Milton. He's answering constituent issues as he is proclaiming the benefits of the great city of Racine.
That's a great mayor.
He is an impressive
guy. We call it multitasking.
He is an impressive guy. So what do you got?
I'm looking it up.
It's 8 o'clock tonight, and then we play at 7 o'clock tomorrow night.
I think it's 8:15.
It is 8:15 tonight.
Central time?
It just says 8:15. Tomorrow is at 7:08.
Yeah.
All right. Mr. Racine was
right again.
Yeah. He's the ultimate Cub fan. We might actually have to call him Mr. Racine / Cubby Boy.
He is Mr. Racine's Mr. Cub, is
okay.
What he is.
There you.
He is the Ernie Banks of Racine, Wisconsin. A little paler.
Ernie
than
Banks
Ernie.
He's a little bit better looking too. Ernie Banks is a pretty good looking guy. So. Yeah.
Ernie Banks was good looking.
He was a good looking guy.
Passed away unfortunately last
great
year.
Great guy.
Yeah.
What a great guy.
Speaking
we
of
do the Joe Madden thing, you know.
He just put his glasses
put
on.
His glasses
got
on,
his Cubs
like
hat on. He does look like Joe Madden.
He really does.
He went down to Wrigley Field and they wanted to ask for his autograph, and then they moved him to the front row to the Bob Uecker seats.
Yeah.
Tell that story real quick. It's a good one.
Well, I went down with Al Vomit on September 3rd against the Giants. And Al had the seats, and they were in the Euchre section. They were in the second row from the in the upper deck from the top. And it was difficult to get up there for me with the heart thing. And I was thinking, boy, I'm not going to be able to go to the bathroom too often up here. So, and just then a guy walked up and said to me, hey, how you doing today? Gave him my standard answer. I'm blessed. He said, well, you are today. He said that we picked you two out of 40-some thousand people to get the ticket upgrade. And they walked us down, and we were six rows behind first base. And the only thing we had to do is agree to be on the Jumbotron at the end of the first inning. So the camera crew came down, shot us, and over the PA they said, Chicago Cubs and APG.com, who've sponsored the event, would like to welcome today's ticket upgrades, Alan Mark from Racine, Wisconsin. And we were on the Jumbotron, and about the fourth inning, I went to the bathroom, and the guy was in there. He goes, George, it's the guy from the Jumbotron. He said, I told you he looked like Madden. He's got his jersey on. We had a great time.
Was that at the Wrigley Field Trough, the men
yes,
from Trough?
Yes, Trough.
Yeah, that's always a pleasure.
He said, can we take a picture with you? I said, not in here.
I have a similar story. When the Bears won the Super Bowl in 1986, we were living in Eagle River. And the Manitowish Waters Christian Headwaters Youth Organization had a fundraiser. And Matt Sui, the Cubs fullback.
Bears
fullback.
Thank you. The Bears fullback was the guest speaker. And without my beard, just the mustache, and Matt Sui had a mustache, we look like twins separated at birth. And they had a raffle for the Monday night game between the Bears and the Packers at Lambeau. Oh, and I won the raffle. And the crowd was very upset because they thought the fix was in, that his brother had won the raffle. Well, nice. Let us give our special guest a proper introduction. Please welcome back to your radio friend for Community Conversation, Mayor John Dickert.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm blessed.
You're blessed. Eichhorst is blessed. We know Thompson's blessed. He's a pastor, for God's sake.
Of course he is.
And Milton Thompson's in the studio. He normally joins us in the 10 o'clock hour on Fridays to have a conversation on race. He is the author, of course, of the great book, The Only One in the Room. How are you, Milt?
I'm doing great.
But Mayor Dickert, this is your monthly GabFest with us. And you specifically asked Mark to have Milton come into the studio for your conversation this morning. Why'd you do that?
I always like to be surrounded by smarter people than me. That's what I do.
Well, you always... No, you're not. I was going to say you always are when you come in here, but that is not true. But why specifically today?
Oh, I just think that, you know, Milton was here last time, and we had a really quick, a really nice conversation. And, you know, I've been interested in what, not only what he's doing, but the book that he's written. And he's been kind enough to give me one of the books that he's written here, so I'm going to read it, obviously. But, you know, this is a big issue right now. And I think that what we have is we have two camps when it comes to race. And, you know, people have started the whole, you know, let's back the badge. And then there's, you know, there's Black Lives Matter. And so I'm a mayor, and the mayors look at this whole thing and say, okay, so forget the two camps. How are we going to solve the problem? And I think that becomes the biggest issue, really, for me. And so anytime you can bring in somebody like Milt to talk about this, it opens it up. We're going to do, as a city, I've promised that we're going to start community conversations about this issue. And there's a lot of people out there that will say, you know, we don't have a problem in Racine because we haven't had any riots and we haven't done this. And I said, well, there's a lot of reasons that we haven't had a problem in Racine. And a lot of it is because we're out in the streets. We're talking to people. And one of the things that I do a lot of is I get out of my car and literally will walk neighborhoods. And you get a chance to talk with folks and find out what they're thinking. But we also have a lot of organizations around here who are doing great work. But it doesn't stop the fact that people are concerned. And there's a lot of anger and there's a lot of frustration. And the way I think you let the steam out of that teapot, you know, if you let a tea kettle go for too long, the steam builds up and who knows what's going to happen. But if you loosen up the top, the steam comes out. I think it's important to loosen up that top by saying, all right, what are you concerned about, number one? Number two, what does it go back to? And then the final key point is, how do we solve it? And I think that's what we have to get to. Because I think one of the things that's happening in the country right now is there's very little talk about solving it. There's a very great amount of talk about using this as a weapon between candidates. And you know, I always tell you guys that the one thing about mayors is that we're caffeinated. But more importantly, we're all about solutions because the rest of it to us is just all garbage. I don't want to hear how upset you are. I want to hear how you're going to help me fix it. And that's what I think it's all about. And to have somebody like Pastor Thompson here is just fantastic because we talk about these issues, get them out there, and do what we're going to do, which is start having the conversations, whether it's in somebody's home or in a coffee shop. I don't care where it is, but let's start having these conversations.
How likely, Milt, is a violent response if something, God forbid, like happened in Milwaukee or has happened all over the country, would happen here in Racine? How likely are we to see a violent response from the African-American community here?
Probably less likely in my estimation, but not completely unlikely. Because when you look at some of the places, when you talk to people about Charlotte outside of the, you know, outside of what happened, it was a little surprising. It's a great city. It's a city that as far as socioeconomics, there's a lot of development going on. Race relations appeared to be, somewhat solid, and then you have an incident that happens that reveals that things were not as solid as people thought, that there was an undercurrent, which is exactly what the mayor, you know, is alluding to. There's always an undercurrent where race is concerned because you have a context for race that goes back generations. When you look at police, unfortunately, the incidents where a police officer shoots an unarmed black man, and people go, why is the reaction so over the top? It's because it's not a reaction to that situation. It's a reaction to Walter Scott. It's a reaction to Eric Garner. It's a reaction, if you will, to Emmett Till. It's a reaction, in other words, it's
a cumulative effect.
It's the volcano or the teapot effect, where all of these things have happened historically, and because the issue has never been brought to any kind of resolution, every new instance just, it's another straw in the camel's back. And unfortunately, these riots and you know, the reactions are too many over the top. How did that happen? Why did that happen? But they don't understand the context.
Yeah. How understanding are you of a violent response to a situation like that and the cumulative effect of the institutional historic racism of this country?
I'm not a proponent of it, but I do understand why that would happen. Having lived through the 60s and the 70s when it really happened, I can tell you right now, and talking to my sons who are in their 30s, you know, one of my sons, it sounds like me back in the 70s in that, you know, he said, "Dad, the Colin Kaepernick thing, I'm all for it." And he's more militant than I've been for a long time. It was shocking. As a matter of fact, he told me that my views on Kaepernick were the same as that of a 50-something-year-old white man.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and I told him, I will throw you out of the house if you ever insult me like that again. But so I understand the anger, and I understand the pent-up frustration. You know, one issue I know we'll get to sooner or later is the economics of race. In other words, a long-term financial economic impact of race. Because I think that's what's triggering everything. When my, just to share a story, when my parents came here, there were great jobs in Racine. J.I. Case, Racine Steel Casting, Massey Ferguson, and everything. And so a lot of black people moved up from the South. And the standard of living for African Americans in Racine was one of the highest in the country. And as long as that continued, blacks moved up the socioeconomic ladder here in Racine. When that ceased, it just exacerbated all sorts of problems and has an impact on race relations, because if you live in a really nice suburban neighborhood, but I'm black and I don't have the same opportunities, we'll never get to know each other as neighbors because I don't have the money to live next to you.
Right. And it's a frustration level. I mean, when you think about it, you know, there's frustration built in. And one of the things that we've been trying to get across to people, including the candidates, and a lot of the mayors from around the country have had these conversations, we're going to continue to do it. When you look back to the problems in general in communities and cities, they all lead back to, and our faith leaders group has found this exact same answer, it all leads back to poverty. And when you get to the point of understanding that fact, then we've got to have the conversation in this country, not about are we going to take from a bunch of, you know, rich white people to give to a bunch of poor people. That's not the answer. The answer is there not a distribution of wealth, but is there a commitment to the middle class? Because not only do workers have to commit to the companies, but the companies have to commit to the workers. And if all we're doing in business is saying we're going to make as much money as humanly possible, and we're going to take away all the health care and the retirement accounts and everything else, then you're not creating a great, strong society, which does what? They buy stuff. And we are an economy built on purchasing. So if there's got to be a shared responsibility there. So if we get at the core issues of poverty, I think the reality is we can start solving some of these problems because you do two things. Number one, you give people hope, which is the first thing that all of our pastors and our faith leaders group have agreed is missing right now. And the second thing is that you give them a chance to raise themselves up. So what we're doing as a city is we've been sitting down for over a year now talking with all the pastors about how we start solving this problem of poverty.
How long do you think it's going to take to solve? Because the poverty rate just came out again. We're well over 20% in Racine. Mm-hmm. And things really have not improved economically for the minority community in this city.
Well, it's going to take, and this isn't a cop-out, it's just the reality. I have only so much power. right? As a mayor, I can do the best I can for my city. If I'm not getting help from the state level and the federal level, the amount of change that we see is limited. So what we're trying to educate state leaders and federal leaders on is a lot of things happen if you deal with poverty. Number one, believe it or not, you save money. Number two, you save lives. And as a Catholic Christian, you know, man, I think, you know, that there's a moral implication there that my job is to save souls as much as it is to help reduce poverty. And then number three is we actually create a better society and a stronger economy. So what I don't understand in the national debate right now is how can you not want to do those things? If you truly believe and you're one of these flag-waving politicians who say, you know, about America, well then do something about it. Instead of sitting around there waving the flag, actually show me that you're interested in solving the problem.
Momentarily, we are going to be hearing from the great Tom Carco with the WRJ on local news update. When we come back, we need to talk about what politicians and government could do, because they've been doing a lot for a long time with very little to show for it. We will continue our conversation with Mayor John Dickert and civil rights leader, author, and pastor Milton Thompson on the other side of the aforementioned great Tom Carco in 90 seconds.
Summer's over. Back to reality. Sports, lessons, and daily carpooling fill your schedule. Time is precious.
Out of 41 brands tested by Consumer Reports, zero were more effective at brightening your smile than standard toothpaste. And one more item that could be a waste of money: frozen fish labeled wild, as in wild salmon. The fact is, about 57% of wild fish fillets come straight from fish farms. And fresh wild salmon isn't in season until summer. So don't throw your money away on something you're probably not even getting. John Tesh with today's Intelligence for Your Life Minutes.
Hi, this is Pastor Milt Thompson. Are you sick? Do you feel lost? Are you looking for answers but just don't know where to turn? I invite you to join me this Sunday at my church, Livingstone's Charismatic Fellowship. Together, we can discover where real answers are found and how the love of Jesus Christ can transform your life. Join me this Sunday at 10 a.m. at Livingstone's Charismatic Fellowship, 3001 Carpenter Avenue in Racine. You'll be glad you did.
Who's that guy?
I don't know, but I like how he sounds.
I like how he looks. You can see him at Livingstone's Charismatic Church Sunday, and you can hear him right now on the radio. This is Glenn Klein on WRJAN's Community Conversation, along with my tag team partner, Mark Eichors. Mill Thompson is the pastor. He is the civil rights leader. He is the author of the book On Race, the only one in the room. We have Mayor John Dickert in the studio this morning as well. So before the news block, Mayor, we were talking about government solutions to poverty. And we had this thing called the war on poverty. You might have heard of it.
I heard of the phrase.
President Lyndon Johnson poured multiple now trillions of dollars towards lifting people out of poverty. It has not worked. Now what?
Well, it's not, I mean, remember that there's no, you know, silver bullet to any of this. Poverty goes up and down. Crime goes up and down. Pollution goes up and down. Economics goes up and down. The reality is, do you want to get to a long-term solution? And do you want to have everybody playing along? Or do you want to do what they tend to do in Washington, which is create buzzwords and phrases and, you know, a program every once in a while? I mean, I remember when Nancy Reagan said, you know, just say no. I mean, really? It's not the reality of the world.
But they didn't spend, well, they might have spent a little money on that campaign, but nothing compared to what we tried to do for the African-American community as a whole to lift them out of poverty. Milt, can an entire community, through government programs, through government initiatives, be lifted out of poverty? Is that possible?
No. And when you think about it, and for me, it's on a personal level, my parents coming up from the South, and my parents would have been desperately poor in the South, coming to Racine and having jobs, and then my parents motivating my brothers and I, you can have a better life than we do. I think that we minimize, I think we overplay the impact of government on really changing the lives of people, and we downplay the role of family, the role of church, the role of other institutions that are more personal, relational in making a difference on the inside of a person as far as their attitude. So, you know, I think that that's where the change really happens.
But can the government, if the government cannot lift an entire community out of poverty, can the government tamp down an individual, and you multiply individuals over an entire country, an entire community through their policies?
I think the government can help with their policies in that. If their policies, you talked about the war on poverty, when we all know two-parent families are a stabilizing influence for society, mm-hmm. not just for kids. And so, and yet you pay people to have children without there being a father in the household. That's what welfare was. You know, you create public housing, which segregated, if you will, poor people and poor people of certain ethnicities in the same neighborhood, which bred crime and other things eventually. So you sit and you look at that and you go, those aren't the policies that are going to help. Is it possible for government to be involved? And I know that in the state of Wisconsin there are programs, and I'm sure that in Racine that we're involved in them, that are looking to help kids. To me, kids are in their 20s and their 30s, who have come out of jail because of things that they've done, and to get them involved in the trades. Mm-hmm. To me, those are the kinds of programs that are work-focused, you know, that build something in people. That's where government can be helpful. Government can be a very good motivator when it comes to bringing business to the table and others to provide resources to fit people into a regular course of life, work, family, you know, being good citizens. Other than that, I don't believe that government is the, I sound like Ronald Reagan, I don't believe that government is the solution. I believe it's part of the mix of entities that have to be a part of the solution.
No, so here's the opposite side of what Milt just told us about. When I was looking at going to college, my father was a plumber. We had a plumbing business for over 100 years. And my father said to me, why in the world would you go to college? You know, get into the trades, go down, work at Racine Steel, go down to Textron, get a job. You can start a family supporting job today. Why would you spend your money on college? And my brother and I were the only two in our family that were even thinking about college. Well, it ends up that four out of our five kids in our family ended up getting college degrees. But by the time I got back from my 5 years in college, half of those companies were gone. And my dad said, wow, you guys knew something that we didn't know. Because he just assumed that would all stay there. Yeah. And, you know, the 90s, 80s and 90s, you know, we were rocking it. Unemployment was at 4%. Everybody, you know, income levels were all up. We were doing great. So there's that. But I think, you know, the thing that Milt talks about that is really important is that what we don't have happening right now is we don't have our federal and state politicians talking to the folks at the local levels. And I've worked at all three levels, so I've watched this go on. They're always the, hey, we're going to tell you what to do, how to fix this, or we're going to cover this up with this phrase or this thing that sounds like we're interested in this. And that kind of stuff drives us crazy as mayors. What we want to see is, listen, here's what we believe are active working things that save money, help people's lives, and get them back into a future. And nobody's listening. And you hear it in the debates going on right now in Washington and with the national elections. Nobody's listening to what's going on at the local level. I was glad to be asked to come out to a meeting to talk to one of the candidates' national groups about what we feel needs to happen moving forward. I was glad to be part of that conversation.
All right. Well, here's one success story we know in urban areas, in heavily populated African-American communities, is that magnet schools and charter schools work. Because let's just say, for the sake of this discussion, the horse is out the barn, that the marriage rate in the country in general, and specifically in the African-American community, is never going to come back down. It's over 70% single mothers. The only opportunity, and you brought up education, Mr. Mayor, is to have the best possible education for these African-American kids and school choice, allowing the parents that are involved with the kids to choose the best school for their children is the best option to give them a leg up in the future. And yet, the Democratic Party, of which you hail, and the teachers union don't want that. Isn't that something we could do locally to give African-American, Hispanic-American, all the local people in Racine a choice of the best schools to send their children to?
Well, first of all, I think that's a bit of a silver bullet, and here's why. Because when you take a small segment of the population and you put money into basically replicating what is already there, you're saying to a small group of people whose parents are, and I think to Milt's point, whose parents are actively involved in their education. So where we see success is where kids' parents are involved in their education. So you take a small group of people, you pull those kids out of the unified school system, you put them into an area where, okay, the parents that are involved are going in, it's going to be a better school because they are involved.
Wait, time out. Who says that they have to be pulled out of the unified school system?
Well, if you're putting them into a school choice, you're pulling them out.
Can't they choose a better school in the unified school district?
Well, some go into charter schools, and I appreciate and agree with charter schools because they stay within the system. But what you tend to do is then you tend to pull out, in the way that the school choice system has worked in Wisconsin, I don't know about nationwide, but what we've seen in Wisconsin is many of these school choice schools are run by people who have come out of fail. They have failed in their jobs in other schools. So these school choice, some of these are, they're sending their kids back after 6 weeks because they know that in the school choice program, if they don't like the kid, they can kick them out. So, okay, so they've taken all the money out of the unified system. They've put that kid in that school choice system. They've kicked him back out, sent him back to Unified. Unified doesn't get the money back to educate that kid now. And that school choice program, which goes almost completely unregulated, has been sucking up money with teachers making principals making exorbitant salaries. There's no control over it. Listen, if you want to do that, that's fine. But meet the same parameters that you have to meet in the schools.
But that's the point, is that it shouldn't be up to the government. It should be up to the parents and the teachers and the principals of those schools to set those parameters. That's the problem.
Well,
having
experience both in the traditional public schools as a teacher, administrator, superintendent, and then being the first executive director of 21st Century Preparatory, which, you know, was a hybrid, if you will, created out of Johnson's WACS funds and a lot of impetus from the business community. I can tell you right now, I guess my views are different than the mayor's, in that if I look at this whole thing globally, if I go to a doctor, a heart surgeon, I don't ask them, did you graduate from St. Cat's or from Horlick? Because down the road, it's completely irrelevant. I just want to know, did you get a good education? Because as a citizen, I only care about your level of proficiency. I don't care about the whether it was a private school, public school, you know, or any other iteration of it. And so I guess my views are, especially with kids of color. I've run within Kenosha Unified, created a special program when I was an elementary principal that partnered with a lady from Chicago by the name of Marva Collins, where we would read mythology and have kids memorize poetry and all of that, because we tried to figure out what does a college proficient student look like in fifth grade. And then let's take the shortcut of taking primarily African-American and Hispanic kids, and let's teach to that, since most of us who were teachers and administrators in that school, we graduated from college. Our kids were headed off to college. We know how to create the roadway to get kids there. And so I think that charter schools, I think that private schools, I think that some of options that we haven't seen yet, because technology is going to drive us away from this discussion. It's going to make it completely irrelevant. I believe you pull out all stops. And people will say, well, but charter schools are allowed to not operate by the same restrictions that public schools have to. And having been a superintendent, my question always was, why do public schools then have to operate being harnessed to restrictions and operating procedures that don't work or that are ineffective?
See, my issue is that to a large extent, it eliminates competition. And if there's anything that has made this country great, that has made the Cubs great, the Packers great, the city of Racine great, is the competition of our competitors. And when you eliminate that, you eliminate the incentive for excellence.
I don't think you're eliminating competition. I mean, if choice schools played under the same rules, fine, that's great. But you have to have economic or instructional performance measures, number one. Number two, if you have a kid that's not doing their job or you got a problem with them, you keep them. If you get the money for them, which you do after about 6 weeks, I believe, you have to keep them. You can't just send them back to Unify because you have a problem with them. And by the way, you keep the money. Unify gets the additional kid with no additional resources. What we're doing with some of our school systems is we're saying we're going to allow a certain percentage of our kids to fail. I've read to over 130 classes in the city. And when I went around one of our middle schools, which is also a high school, I realized that an entire table of kids, which was every race, creed, and color, we were in the 10th grade, could not read. So I said to the person after, why is that table there? Why are we not putting extra effort into them? And he said, because we can only do so much. So what I get back to is this. School is not a business. Government is not a business. We run efficiently. We run effectively. We have different things that we're supposed to accomplish. We are a service industry as a city. And our clients are 80,000 people. Those are my bosses. A school is there to educate children. So if your child is coming in day one without sleep, without food, without a shower, without good clothes, they are not ready to learn. And what we're saying to them is we're going to take out the good kids. We're going to put them in a choice school. And by the way, there's no controls over that choice school. So Lord knows what's happening over there. And you're going to just pluck the kids you don't like and send them back to Unified. Rather than saying, how about we start dealing with the problems that we have in our schools? And my wife is a teacher, seventh year now as a teacher. She taught at McKinley, and now she's at Park. And when you go back to the teachers and ask them what the problems are, they will tell you, I have 33 kids in my class. Three of them are completely and utterly disruptive. You pull those three out, I can teach the other 30. But when you leave them in there and you mandate that they stay, it becomes completely dysfunctional and the other 30 are being affected by it. So one of the things I've tried to talk to my wife about is, okay, what if we pull those three out and we put them in a smaller class size with more attention and more effort? And if they screw up there, you put them in even a smaller class size with more effort and more attention. Why? Because in the long run, we're going to save the $50,000 to $100,000 a year we're going to spend with them in prison for life. So are we going to make a commitment as elected officials towards the front end, which is proactive, just like any company that makes a good steel that they start with to make a good product? Or are we simply going to say, we're going to take 20 or 30%, we're not going to teach them, and we're going to deal with them on the back end? Well, to me, as a fiscally, responsible guy, that's crazy. To me, as a Catholic, that's immoral.
What's your time frame? What time's your next appointment?
I don't know.
Can you hang out for a little while?
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, excellent. That's Mayor John Dickert. He's going to hang. We've got Milton Thompson. He's the author of the book on race, the only one in the room. I haven't done that for a while, Milton.
Yeah, I know.
The only one in the room, a lifetime observation on race. This is Glenn Klein along with Mark Eichhorst on WRGN. We're going to continue. We're supposed to be having this conversation on race. We're doing it. How about that?
Your radio friend is AM 1400 WRJN, Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, a Magnum.media station.
Special report, Hurricane Matthew. I'm Evan Haining.
Pay attention to what your local officials are telling you. If they tell you to evacuate, you need to get out of.
Today's will be cooler. A couple of leftover showers around this morning. The variable cloudiness this afternoon. High today 59, inland 67, lakeside. Then clear and chillier tonight, going down to 34 with scattered frost inland to 42 lakeside. Tomorrow and Sunday, mostly sunny. High tomorrow, 60. Sunday's high, 63 degrees. For AccuWeather, I'm meteorologist Elliot Abrams on your radio friend, AM 1400, WRJN.
Thank you, EA. 68 degrees and cloudy in Kenosha, 65 at the municipal airport, and partly sunny in Burlington, 71 and cloudy at Milwaukee's Mitchell International Airport, and at Magnum.media's international headquarters in Racine. At WRJN, it is mostly sunny, 69 divine degrees. The wind is out of the west at 16 to 25 miles an hour. The dew point is at 60 degrees. The relative humidity, 73%. And the barometric pressure is still rising at 29.99. It is 12 minutes after 10 o'clock on your Thank God It's Friday morning. Glenn Klein in the studio. We are going to return to our community conversation on race with Mayor John Dickert and civil rights leader Milton Thompson. But first, I have a question for you beautiful humans. Have you heard what other small businesses are saying about Spectrum Business Internet and phone? Tom Salone with Core 4 Fitness says Spectrum Business gives us the fastest internet service, but also at the best price. And Laura Partridge at CC Media said with Spectrum Business, we have the most reliable service at the least cost. That's why your business needs Spectrum Business. You'll get 60 meg internet that's up to 10 times faster than AT&T Business Edition Internet Elite for only $39.99 a month, and reliable business phone for only $29.99 a month per line with free unlimited long distance and over 30 free business calling features. Plus, with Spectrum Business, there are no contracts and no hidden fees or taxes. So isn't it time for your business to make the switch to Spectrum Business? Call 855-327-8001 today and switch to Spectrum Business. That's 855-327-8001 and call now. But keep your radio on or your device, depending on how you're listening to this quality broadcast, because, Marco, it has not been boring.
You know, it was, I think, earlier this summer that we had, when we had Mr. Thompson on the first time and we talked about his book, and I knew immediately that I liked him and I had a lot of respect for him. I've known the mayor for many, many years, and one of the things I thought about is, how am I going to get these two together? And when we talked about it earlier this week, and bringing Milton on with the mayor in our community conversation, I thought it would be good. I didn't think it would be this good. It has really been an entertaining first hour, and fortunately, we're going to be able to continue for the next half hour. I think, as you can see, each of these gentlemen talk, the other one's usually nodding his head in approval. I think these two are going to be able to get a lot of things done for our community in a good sense in the future.
Mayor Dickert has been kind enough to extend for this hour. You're white, by the way, in case you were wondering.
I am.
Yeah, you are a Caucasian politician.
I'm actually kind of a mutt, you know, because I've got a little Irish, a little Austrian, a little
French.
Well,
even science now verifies that we are all from an original couple somewhere in Africa.
I know. We even have internal squabbles between our family, how much Native American, if there's Native American in us. So it's kind of interesting. I should probably just do the DNA test and find out.
Can you dance?
Huh? Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, maybe.
I can sing it, brother.
Is that okay to say, Milt?
I'll let the people who call in later tell you whether or not that's appropriate.
It's a joke, folks. It was a joke. But, you know, we can't even joke about race because it's such a hot topic. And there are certain comedians that will go there and certain talk show hosts apparently that will go there too. But if you can't joke about it, then it's an issue that really can't be addressed appropriately in our culture because humor is part of the deal.
Right. It is. You know, and it's difficult, right? I mean, for a guy like me who grew up in the city and whose family's been here for well over 100 years, you know, the roots run deep. But what I find interesting is when I was growing up, I grew up with the Marino family. And, later on in life, people told me, well, you know, the Marinos are Mexicans. I said, no, they're not. They're the Marinos. This is what I grew up with. Why would you call them, you know, any kind of a classification or name? And I never got that as a kid. And what I see now is that kids, especially my kids and other kids that I know, they're kind of colorblind to all this stuff. They don't get it. They don't get why people would, you know, because they're young. They're still, you know, new to all this. They don't get why people would even think twice about a kid. Why would you call him X? He's my friend. And I love that about him. But The difficulty for me, obviously, is I grew up in Racine. When I was growing up, 93% of our city was white. So, you know, we didn't have a lot of diversity. Now, I think it's one of our greatest assets. But you can't ask me as a white male to completely comprehend
true
anything that's going on in anyone's life.
And that's a very legitimate point. But you are the chief executive of the mm-hmm. city of Racine. Mm-hmm. How, as a Caucasian government official, can you speak strongly into the community of people of color in our city?
I don't think you speak strongly. I think what you do is what I think has been one of the greatest benefits for what I've been doing for the last 7 years, which is you literally drive around. I like to visualize things. So when I drive around the city, if there's something going on, I will stop in my car and I'll get out and I'll look at it. And then I usually walk around up to, you know, if people are outside, walk around, say hey, start talking to them. And we have these great conversations with people. I think you have to get out there. You have to take the tie off. You got to roll up the sleeves, take the jacket off, and just talk to people. And what I have found is that people open up when you take off, you know, the labels and just talk to them. Hey, what's going on? How's it going on around town? And I have found that I learned more about what's going on in our city by doing that than anything. So people are always shocked when I do it, but I'll just get out of my car and five people sitting around talking. Hey, what's going on? And we start this conversation, and I think that's what it's all about.
Do they know who you are all the time?
We'll start, and oftentimes people look at me like, why is he talking to us? And then somebody will come out and say, hey, that's the mayor. And they go, what? And then we start this conversation, you know, and we're taking selfies, and we're taking pictures of each other. But
when you're in the predominant African-American community doing that, mm-hmm. are people surprised just to see a white guy walking around?
Well, they're usually shocked to find out that it's me. And the first question is usually, what are you doing here? And I say, well, you know, I heard about this problem, so I came to take a look at it. And then we start into this conversation, and it's organic, right? We just start into this conversation about what's going on. And that's usually where I find out where the drug houses are. It's usually where I find out where the gangbangers are, where the good neighbors are and the bad neighbors are. And, you know, I'll give you a real quick example because I know we don't have a lot of time. I pulled up and I was looking at this thing, and these people were sitting on their front porch, and we had to figure out this wall that we had to fix. So I walked over and said, hey, you guys, how's it going? And they're like, hey, what are you doing around here? And I said, well, we got to fix this wall. So we start this conversation, and they tell me about this drug house across the street. And I said, well, it looks pretty bad, and I got these dogs out there. The long-term solution was they told me about that drug house. Within 15 minutes, I had a cop over there ticketing the people for the dog because the dog was loose, and it was a pit bull. And I was worried it was going to get at the children upstairs. The screens were off, so I was worried about the kids falling out of the windows. So I got the inspector over there, and he wrote a letter to the landlord and fined the living pajesus out of them because the house wasn't up to code for any of it. And these people looked at me and said, Mayor, I can't believe you did that. And I said, the only reason I am here doing this is because you told me. I didn't know that house was bad. I don't know anything about this. So we're empowering them to understand that they are the solution as much as I am.
You are literally having a mobile community conversation.
Sure.
He is Mayor John Dickard. He walks around the town, and they'll do that. We've seen this many times. This is Glenn Klein in the studio, along with Milton Thompson, the civil rights leader locally here and the author of The Only One in the Room. This is Community Conversations on WRJM. Mark Eichhorst is here, too.
Mayor, you were just talking about drug houses and gangs. You had a pretty big bust yesterday within our community.
Yeah, we've been really blessed with an incredible relationship with the FBI, DEA, and Homeland Security. So working in tandem with our police department, and I believe even the sheriff's department was involved, you know, since 2000, I think in 2010, I made an announcement that we're going to eradicate the city of gangs and drugs. And we did that as a way to say, you know, we're putting our foot down. We had the highest crime rate per capita in the state when I started. And we were blessed with not only an amazing police force and organizations that wrap around services around that, but, you know, we've had a very strong, consistent goal. And it's one of the reasons we're at a 52-year low in crime. And you know, we've dropped everything. We're rated as the 20th best city in America for reductions in crime. And, you know, it's because of great people. But it's not only our police force, and we have an amazing police force. Let's be honest. We have an amazing police force. But it's all those other organizations that are helping on the front end. and on the back end, like vocational ministries, you know, saving these kids when they come out of prison. So we're really blessed with, you know, that all of that. It's all working together, even including Rick, Racine Interfaith Coalition, that everybody's working together on this problem, and I think that's how we solve it.
Of course, you guys did a very smart thing by retaining Chief Art Howell, because he was being wooed by Rockford, and he's done an amazing job. But Milt, Art Howell is an African-American man. From the African-American community perspective, is it easier to receive policing and government mandates from people of your background?
The easy answer would be yes, even though there are counterexamples to it, Charlotte being one of them. One of the interesting things was the officer who shot and killed the young man was black. The police chief was black. In Dallas, where you had an instance a few weeks ago, the police chief was black. And so, you know, on the surface, you would think that that would eliminate all conflict, but obviously in Charlotte, it didn't eliminate conflict.
And having an African-American president doesn't seem to have helped. If anything, things seem to be worse in the last 8 years.
Well, because, again, it's not just a matter of, and I don't want to minimize the fact that you need role models who look like a part of the population. If you never have black mayors, if you never have black governors, if you never have black senators or superintendents or whatever role, what happens is eventually there's a disincentive that works down to young people. Why be aspirational at all? Because I'm never going to see anybody that looks like me in a position of power. So I don't want to minimize, you know, the role that that can have and the power that that can have. But I think that just having somebody of a particular color in those roles without economic opportunity and other things, good educational systems and other things in place that raise my quality of life, having a, in the 60s, we would have, and I don't mean to demean people, but we would have called them a token. So having someone in a token position, I think the black community and I believe the Hispanic community are brighter than to just be wooed by the fact that somebody is in a position who's of the same color. Change and power distribution, as the mayor talked about, has to be more diverse than that. It's got to be more significant than that.
One of the things that has happened, you were mentioning earlier, Mr. Mayor, about your kids not seeing color. The increase in people's openness to gay and lesbian marriage has gone up dramatically as the millennial generation has gotten older. They can't even understand what the big deal is. Mm-hmm. And as people come out of the closet from the gay community, we get to know that we actually have friends and relatives who are gay. That eliminates a lot of barriers. Mm-hmm. We still have a lot of barriers over race, because as soon as you look at somebody, you can know that what race they are, generally speaking. You getting out there and rubbing elbows with people in our community of color, people having friends. I was invited to the Southeast Cigar Society, and I finally went. And there's a bunch of black guys and white guys in there. When you have friends and when you have relationships with people that are different than you, that changes attitudes. That's what the conversation's all about.
Well, I think it's also part of your job. You know, if there's one thing that you see from a lot of the mayors that I know, you know, the first thing that we said to Stephanie Rawlings Blake in Baltimore was get on a pair of tennis shoes and a pair of jeans and a shirt and get out in the streets.
The shirt part's really the most important part of that. Oh.
So, you know, you can't go out and have a conversation with people in the midst of riots in a dress and high heels. You know, you've got to get down to that point where you're actually in the streets. And I think that that's the one thing that if I've learned in my 30 years of government at local, state, and federal levels is that, you know, the differentiator and the reason that people have a total disassociation with Congress and the state houses. And Milt, I'm going to take one step back. You know, it wasn't just the when you were talking about the that things are worse under this president. He's had a Congress that has done nothing to help him over 8 years. I mean, people forget about the fact that this is a Congress that literally said publicly, we're going to do nothing to help this man for 8 years.
And I think the Republicans would take objection to that.
I want because they've actually said it publicly, and they're quoted with it publicly. We're going to do nothing but make sure that you never get reelected.
But do you think that the guy was because the guy was black, or because he was so liberal and wanted such big government solutions?
I think it's short-sighted.
Do you think they're racist, the Republicans?
I think there's some people that are, but here's the bigger point:
is Donald Trump a racist?
What they said, I've heard nothing but racist statements out of Donald Trump. The big thing is this, though, Glenn, is that when people say, well, things aren't as good as they should be with a black president, what about the fact that you've had a Congress that has done nothing to help? And that's the disenfranchisement that people see in this country right now. They see leaders as not helping, but I see leaders as people not getting back down to the ground level where you can do so much reconnaissance at the local level if you actually talk to people and let them speak to you so that you listen.
That's the key, isn't it? Is that it's got to start locally.
Yes.
That's why the crime rate has come down in this city so dramatically.
We've gotten very little help from folks at the state and federal level. I mean, I will say this, that between the EPA and the DOT, we've gotten a lot of help on a lot of issues, but we've gotten very little help from anybody else. It goes back to people are disenfranchised. Why are things not working? Well, number one, the best thing you can do is get back down to the local level. Ask people, but listen to them when they're talking. Don't just ask them to talk so you can blow it off and go back and say the same thing you want to Fox News or MSNBC tomorrow. Actually listen to what people are saying, because to the earliest part of our conversation, solutions are available. Saving money and changing lives, there is availability to do that. The question is, does the nation and do our elected officials have the will to do that? That's the real question. So if you want answers, they're there. We've got them. We can help. The question is, do you really want to do that, or do you want to do what I see mostly, which is they're more worried about getting reelected than they are about the next generation? So that's my concern, and that's my frustration.
He's Mayor John Dickert. He's concerned. He's frustrated, but he's out there active, that's for sure. And thanks for the extra time this morning.
No,
are you going to be pulling for the Cubs?
My Brewers are out.
Yeah.
And I started watching Jack Brickhouse at 1 o'clock, 1:15 every day, and Mark knows that. So, yeah, I'm Brewers are out. I'm a Cubs fan.
Okay, because unlike the great Tom Carrico, you want Mark and myself to be happy.
I always want you guys to be happy. I even want Milt to be happy. I mean, he's as good a guy as anybody in this room.
We will continue with Milt Thompson. We've got some pretty tough questions to ask this local civil rights leader. Mayor Dickert, thank you as always.
It's a blessing. Thank you.
The great Tom Carrico, the aforementioned great Tom Carrico, is awaiting us in the news center with the WRJN News Block. Coming up next.
I'm here at Mall of America celebrating 99 days of summer with Ned, the human sound effects machine.
Hello.
Who's here to bring all the fun and excitement to life.
Let's do this.
Start